Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief and WAMC favorite from the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
So, there's a lot going on. Let's start at the very top with the President of the United States. President is in New York State, traveling around Pennsylvania, going to some of the places which, well, you could think could be a fracking site. What do you make of it?
Oh, it's going to be interesting. That's one thing everyone's going to look at. You know, the president is obviously on board with fracking. He made it a point in his State of the Union. And Andrew Cuomo is obviously uncomfortable with the issue, to say the least.
You know, He got burned.
Everyone thought it was going to happen real quickly when he took office. And now he's still studying the issue, still studying the environmental impacts, he says. And he got asked about it earlier this week. He was asked, you know, about the president's comments. He goes, well, I agree that energy-wise and economically, it makes sense. It is a valuable thing. However, we have to weigh that with the environmental issues, and we don't know what those are at this point.
Well, refresh my memory, Ken Lovett. In the very beginning, he certainly sounded like an advocate.
Yeah, he certainly did. I think most people thought it was going to happen, even as a pilot project. But, you know, he talked about the upstate economy. It was something I think he really planned on doing. I don't think he anticipated the depth of opposition from the environmental side, from the progressive side of the party as well.
Or that it would catch on as the issue.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you know, celebrities from Yoko Ono, Mark Ruffalo, the actor. To just everyday people. I mean, I remember the day of his State of the State address in January, walking down to the Empire Plaza, and I had never seen so many protesters lined up, you know, on a State of the State day, lined up along the concourse protesting fracking.
They got hundreds of thousands of comments over the years, you know, on this. It's huge. You raise an interesting point, which is the upstate strategy. I mean, it's clear that Andrew Cuomo knows his father didn't do that well upstate, suffered a tremendous reversal on his poll numbers after he came out courageously, I thought, on the gun control issue, and now has been inching his way back and is spending a lot of time upstate.
Absolutely. I think he was surprised at the level of opposition to the gun law. I think they knew that people would be, he kept saying, oh, it's a minority, it's a small minority, you know, 70% favor this bill. But it is a vocal minority, particularly upstate. It's a huge issue.
So it could be sort of like guns were for upstate as fracking was to the liberals.
Well, exactly. So I think this really hurt him in the polls. His numbers really went down and continued to go down. And now we're seeing, you know, he's up there for fishing derbies and for racing and
whitewater. And he invites the reporters. Did he invite you in to be in a canoe?
I was invited. I did not go.
How come?
Had other things to do that weekend.
Okay. But the upstate strategy seems to be working.
Well, his numbers are starting to stabilize and go up. Look, I mean, the truth is, unless the Republicans can find a dynamite candidate to even have a chance, which so far we have not seen.
A self-financing dynamite candidate.
Right. We have a governor who's got $28 million. He's still relatively popular. I mean, I don't think he's obviously concerned, but I don't think they're afraid they're going to lose next year. But I think they want to build up a huge victory in hopes of if he does decide to run for president in 2016, that he can go in on a landslide victory here in New York.
Okay, so now you've said it, and I'm going to follow up on it. 2016, he told me that if Hillary runs, he can't run.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say he was going to run, but he said, because I said, I know everything you're doing is in order to run for president. He said, no, if Hillary runs and she's going to run, I can't run. So where does that leave him?
Well, look, I've argued, you know, since he's taken office, he's obviously interested in being president. Whether he has made the decision to do it, even before Hillary became an option again, as big as it is now, I think everything he has done as governor has had a dual purpose. Does it work in New York? Will it work nationally? And I think everything is looked through that prism. So if he does decide to run, he has a record, he has a narrative he can portray, you know, hey, I had a split legislature, I was able to get things done like gun control,
sure.
We were able to rein the budget in, you know, conservative issues, liberal issues, progressive issues, all that. If Hillary runs, I don't think there's a chance he can run. I mean, she would trounce him in his own state, the polls show.
I don't even know if Biden runs that he's a shoo-in.
Right. You know, look, he hasn't done much in terms of national work. And, you know, others are. And I know we're a couple of years out still. But, you know, I was at the convention in Charlotte, the Democratic National Convention. Sure. And I talked to a lot of delegates from other states and key states like, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire. They didn't know who he was. They knew his father. They kind of sort of heard of Andrew Cuomo. But I was surprised because I just thought he would be more popular among the rank and file delegates. You know, these are people into politics, but there wasn't a real recognition of him.
He's pretty New York, isn't he?
He is very New York. And he's not as retail politics. He doesn't do it as well as his father did. His father would wade into crowds. He's not as comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm. And the relationship with the legislature. We're in hiatus right now. Is anything changing, Ken Lovett? In other words, as they take some time off, things got a little contentious there at the end. You think some time off is helping?
I think it could actually hurt because during this time off, he put together this Moreland Commission to look into public corruption, and the legislature is not happy with that. They feel it's not only he's overstepping his boundaries, something the governor says he is not doing, but they feel that it's really an attack on them, and they view it that way. And it's going to be interesting to see how they react when they come back to the things he's pushing.
Now, from the very beginning, it was clear that Andrew Cuomo started to pick on, I thought, the comptroller of the state of New York, Tom DiNapoli, who's been in the studio many times, who I like very much, and who I think has been working very hard as comptroller. But Cuomo doesn't seem to want to give it up. And let me just preface it one more thing and say that his job, DiNapoli's, is to go and audit the state government agencies. And I don't think Andrew likes that. So now Cuomo comes back with his top, one of his top guys, and they do a legislative mandated audit of the comptroller's office, and there's hell to pay.
There is. This tension goes back actually to when Andrew Cuomo was attorney general and Tom DiNapoli had just become comptroller. As attorney general, Cuomo was looking into the pension fund scandal, the pay-to-play scandal that was under Alan Hevesy.
Yes.
But he never cut DiNapoli a break. He felt that DiNapoli wasn't quick enough to enact changes. He also felt competitive because there was a little while where there was a tit-for-tat. Cuomo would say, I want to do X, and then DiNapoli would enact it on his own without waiting. And so he wasn't happy about that.
Didn't get the credit.
So there was a lot of tension there. He didn't endorse him for comptroller.
Yeah, that was
the ongoing investigation.
Amazing.
And now it's simmered and it's sometimes.
Some of the wags were saying, Ken Lovett, that Mario Cuomo had trouble with Al Del Bello and that Andrew Cuomo has trouble here with Tom DiNapoli, and that these are very bright politicians who want to balance their tickets ethnically in every other way, and that that might have been one of the reasons for this.
I don't. I just think, you know, the reputation of Andrew Cuomo is he doesn't play well in the sandbox, you know, with other people. And
well, but he's got to have a reason for not
But he, you know, he's had tensions with the attorney general's office, although that's a little bit on the decline right now with this Moreland Commission. But there's been tension there. The feeling was that he set up this unit, this Department of Financial Services, to act as a shadow attorney general's office. And now they're reaching into the comptroller's office and promising more, you know, more audits. Look, if the audits are good, then it's worthwhile. DiNapoli's office was very upset with this audit, saying they didn't have a chance to respond. Most audits, you see the response of the agency.
Sure.
They didn't have a chance. They said that it was misleading, and they didn't use the word reckless, but that's what they really implied.
Well, they didn't come up with much. They said his computers were old, and he said, well, we've got an order in for new computers.
Right, and they didn't mention that, really, and they also said that the pension fund was at risk, and DiNapoli vehemently denies that this is a, they said it would be be the equivalent of going into a human resources department at a Wall Street firm, finding problems, and then saying that there's fraud. You know, it's not the same thing.
I don't know what problems they really found. I mean, the newspaper reports, including your own of the audits, didn't show me that they had come up with any smoking gun.
Well, no, it's no smoking gun. What they said was they're using a system that's from the 1950s and a software that's written in 1950s code and a computer system that dates back a couple of decades. And they're saying that it would be easy in this day and age to hack it. And so DiNapoli's argument was, well, okay, but we've already put in orders and we're already in the process of changing over. So they felt it was an unfair audit.
Ken, I guess I want to ask you what the outcome is. Obviously, Tom DiNapoli was a favorite of Sheldon Silver. That's how he got elected by the legislature when Hevesy went to jail. And now he wins again. He proves himself to be popular despite the fact that the governor is clearly not supporting him. Why can't Andrew just leave him alone? He's doing a good job.
You know, some people raise the question of whether or not this is in response. There's been some sharp critical audits of late of
health department,
of the health department and the Medicaid spending. He was critical of some of the stuff with the budget.
So in other words, Cuomo is mad at him because he's doing his job?
Well, that's what some people say. I won't go in the mind of what the governor, why this is. You know, they say they're just doing their job and that they are required to audit the auditors.
But you're a columnist, yeah. And you can give your opinion, so I guess I got to ask you whether it seems like this is beyond what is expected of him. For example, you just said that they're supposed to do this audit of the comptroller's office. Yes, and as I remember the language, it said up to once every 5 years or something.
But they're promising more in coming months.
Yes.
And, you know, look, I mean, obviously, DiNapoli's heading into an election year next year, so they're concerned about that. You know, will there be a primary? Would the governor tacitly or behind the scenes back someone to primary Tom DiNapoli? We're going to find that out in the next couple of months.
Any names been mentioned?
Well, one had been Elliot Spitzer, but obviously he's busy right now.
Is Andrew Cuomo going to support Elliot Spitzer.
Oh, people he would support. Yeah. You know, one I heard was Ben Lasky, the guy
who's doing the audit.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, but that's what someone told me the other day.
You know, one of the things I've been reading in the papers lately, the New York Times and other places, is that New York politics are getting to be pretty clannish. There was an interesting article about how the Orthodox Jews vote as a bloc. You're a keen political analyst. Are we going in that direction where the various religious groups and others get together in order to make electoral change and the rest of that?
Well, I mean, I think that's been around forever. I mean, you've had more of the Hasidic sects, but, you know, usually they come out for a candidate and that community comes out in force for that candidate. So I don't think that's really new to the situation. Obviously, you've always had a strong presence in the African-American communities. You know,
sure.
You're seeing the Latino communities becoming a little more empowered. You know, whether they all vote en masse, I don't know. But it's certainly segregation of the voters has always been there.
And that's one of the reasons, I guess, that each campaign has a Jewish desk and an Italian desk in order to mobilize votes. Speaking of which, it is fascinating to me that up until all three newspapers, including yours, went after Elliot Spitzer, who was running for comptroller, the African-American community, we haven't seen a poll since, was wildly in favor of Spitzer. Why do you think that was?
Well, I mean, according to some of those who've been quoted, it's, you know, that they feel that they rally around someone who's under a lot of fire. They feel that this wasn't a major...
In other words, they can associate with being badly treated.
Yes, and especially by the media in their eyes. Mm-hmm. And certainly a lot of people, not just the African-American community, but I think I've been hearing this since he resigned, you know, look at it and say, oh, prostitution isn't that big a deal, you know, that he went to a hooker. They're more willing to forgive that. And look, you know, I think there's some definite support for him because he picked David Paterson as his lieutenant governor.
Which is interesting in itself in that Paterson is now sort of going with the crowd.
Sort of.
But he campaigned for the Spitzer opponent.
Yeah, he campaigned for him, but if you watched it, it was real interesting because while campaigning, he was also defending Spitzer. I mean, he's close with Spitzer, but I think a lot of people in the African-American community recognize that Elliot Spitzer, you know, not only selected David Paterson, who was the first black lieutenant governor, but he also ended up becoming the first black governor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there may be some remnants of that as well.
Yeah. Talk to me about Silver himself, the speaker. Everybody's gone after Silver, you know, every kind of thing that they can, including a recent story about how many miles he was racking up and using for himself when he travels. Is there a point at which, if he keeps getting elected, somebody has to step in because that's the way the system works? I mean, we'll either see, we've seen investigations by the feds, we've seen the rest. I mean, it seems a little unseemly to me.
Unseemly?
Unseemly in that if people elect somebody.
Right.
Look, I don't like the way the legislature behaves. I have never made any secret about that. But what looks to me is like they're out to get Silver, and that's their way of cutting into the legislative prerogative.
But he also has a constituency of two, basically, his district and the legislature. He's, you know, the public at large doesn't elect him speaker. And I think you're going to see next year, if Sheldon Silver becomes a major issue in a lot of the races, either upstate or in the marginal suburban districts, you're going to see a lot of Democrats under pressure from editorial boards and Republicans saying, do you support Silver? Would you vote for him for another term as speaker? And, you know, that is probably going to be, you know, if he's going to be ousted, that's going to be the way it happens. Mm. There's going to be enough people feeling pressure among the rank and file that they say it's time to go.
But of course, the reason they love him is because he takes the heat for them.
Well, that's exactly right. And there's no heir apparent. There's no clear heir apparent, which is an issue. You know, no one has come forward. No one is working it right now. So it depends. Look, this latest scandal with William Rapfogle down in the city, who's a close friend of the speaker's, his wife works for the speaker's as chief of staff. You know, some people think that could be it, but everyone thought Lopez could be it or Micah Kellner could be it. And, you know, he keeps going 20 years later.
And you don't hear much about those guys. Even Vito Lopez, ni Gropez, you know, they're gone. It's not as if they're here. And the guy's running for city council in New York, and it still doesn't have legs.
No. And I just think, look, the speaker knows how to play the game. And, you know, one of the things he's very good at is taking the slings and arrows.
Boy, is he ever.
And, you know, I mean, will it ever come to a time where he either feels, well, this is it? You know, I'm sure at some point, you know, a lot of people feel he wants to set the record. He's only a couple years away. You know, as long as serving speaker, we'll see.
Yeah. So now you mentioned the Moreland Act Commission. For those who are listening right now, the Moreland Act, the governor has the right to set up these commissions that can do investigatory work. Dewey, others used it. And they can really, they have subpoena power. They've all been deputized by the attorney general so that they have power to look at the legislature. Is there any leaks coming out of there? Are they doing anything?
Well, they've issued subpoenas. As a matter of fact, they've issued subpoenas to five developers who won tax breaks in a housing bill. There was a bill that was expanding rent protections for loft tenants down in the city. It also extended a program for condo, a tax abatement program for condo and co-op owners. And within this massive bill, they slipped in a tax break for five developers of these major projects that are, you know, where rich people are going to live. And it gave them tax credits on those properties. It turns out that the commission, has subpoenaed those five developers. And one of the things I've been reporting on the last couple of weeks is that Governor Cuomo, who signed the bill, housing bill with the tax breaks, received hundreds of thousands of dollars from those developers shortly before he signed the bill, and even a little bit after when he signed the bill. And, you know, they'll argue, well, you know, he's received from these people before, which is true. But one thing when I looked at the records was these donations were far and above anything these developers ever gave the governor as attorney general or governor until this bill was in play. And then all of a sudden, you know, 100,000 by one developer a couple of days before he signed the bill. And then the president of that development company, 3 weeks after he signed the bill, gave another 100,000 to the state party account that Cuomo was using to run ads promoting his agenda. And then a second developer gave $75,000 to Cuomo before he signed the bill. So
something's very interesting, Ken Lovett. I'm so glad you're here because I keep learning things. But something else is very interesting. You have now the question as to whether or not contributors to not-for-profits should be named. And JCOP, which you called before, the legislative, the Everybody Ethics Commission, gave a pass to the folks who were pro-choice, NARAL. Now, that has raised conservative hackles and said, okay, everybody, if you make us disclose our lists of contributors, we're going to lose money. So you can't pick and choose this way, is the argument. What's likely to come out of this?
Well, it's a good question. The only one they've granted so far is to NARAL, the pro-choice group. They have then said, we're going to hold off and study the issue on all the other requests. They've gotten,
like they're studying fracking.
Yes. They've gotten several other requests.
Yeah.
But others are saying, well, while you're studying it, you should rescind the NARAL, because why should everyone else have to play by the rules and not NARAL?
But we should just make clear to our listeners that that's only for those who are in the business of lobbying.
Yes, and they have to show their donors who gave at least $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking to Ken Lovett, who I love having with us here. The question now is that after Labor Day, things really heat up, particularly in the election of the New York City mayor. Your newspaper endorsed Chris Quinn, the speaker of the city council. But interestingly, it's a real horse race, isn't it?
Yeah, Bill de Blasio surprised a lot of people the last Quinnipiac poll. I think it was last week.
He's sort of the liberal in the race.
He is, yes. He's the progressive candidate. He showed up, and all of a sudden, he was the front runner. He had 30%. Now, what happens is, if no one gets 40% in the primary, which is September 10th, which is likely to happen, then they have a runoff of the top two.
And so, who will they be, please?
Well, it's either going to be Quinn, de Blasio, and Bill Thompson. So it's going to be two of those three.
Yeah.
Thompson, I want to say it's going to be de Blasio and Quinn, but Thompson always seems to do better at the polls than he does in the polls.
Why is that?
We saw that 4 years ago with Bloomberg. You know, everyone said, oh, Bloomberg is going to
squash him
in a cakewalk, and then all of a sudden Thompson only lost by a couple of points.
Yeah.
He just, for whatever reason, he doesn't poll well, but he does better at the polls. So,
would they be under asking black voters, potential black voters?
It could be, or it could be people just don't really tell what they're going to do, or it's hard on a primary. You don't know who's going to show up. You don't know who's going to come out. You know, it's not a huge turnout, so it's really hard to nail that.
Yeah, and there are a whole bunch of strategic decisions that have been made here. We'll see what New Yorkers are themselves made of, because, for example, the whole question whether a lesbian, when you go into the polling booth, creates antipathy among some voters. One can only hope not, but it's always possible.
I think in New York City, that's less of an issue, certainly, but it's going to be interesting. And then, we'll see how the Republicans run. We're not even talking about them, but you got Joe Loda, you got, Castamontitis. It's going to be an interesting fall.
It's always great to have our friend Ken Lovett, who does such a good job as the best columnist on New York State politics. And we thank you, Ken, for spending all of this time with us. As I said before, we always learn something. So again, thank you for being here.
It's always fun. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.